If only they knew, the hub for young business minds.
Hello everyone, it's Ted Lawler and welcome back to the If Only They Knew podcast. Today we're joined by Alistair King, co-founder of New Zealand pet food brand Nude, and they've sold over 30 million bowls of pet food across four markets and is soon to be entering the UK, already securing a massive retail deal. Today we speak about how to compete with big brands, dropping out of uni and much more. So if you want to learn how to start and scale your brand, this is the podcast for you. So we'll start off by, if you don't mind, introducing yourself and what you do.
Sure. So my name is Alistair King. I run a company called Nude Pet Food. So started about 2.5 years ago now. So originally from New Zealand, hence the accent. I launched it originally in Canada and another 11 odd countries around the world now over the past 18 months or so. Most recently, Tesco in the UK. So we rolled out there in October.
So before we dive into exactly what you're up to today, how hard has this journey been in the past 2 and a bit years, and how much effort have you put in? Just to give a bit of context for everyone listening.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely been, I guess it depends how you define hard, right? Like, I think for me, there's never been like a moment where I've been like, oh, this I want to quit or give up. But there's been plenty of moments where I thought statistically it was probably not going to work. But I think it's one of those things, right? When you enjoy it and you're like less focused on the outcome necessarily and more just focused on like doing what you want to do every single day, that actually it's just like, it's fun. And so you don't really think about like the challenges necessarily. You're just like constantly just trying to improve and see how you can get better and better and better.
Yeah, that's one thing I've found as well. For those listening, I've just started a journal in between the break I've had from this podcast. I started a journal, focused on that, and now I'm back. But what I've been finding is I've been spending around 12 hours literally every day at my desk. And like you said, it doesn't seem like work to me because I enjoy it so much. So yeah, just before we dive in a bit deeper, what do you sort of get up to on a daily basis? Are you doing 12 hours at the desk or are you out and about? What's your sort of day like with this?
Yeah, it's a real mix. And you probably find the same, I'm sure. But that's like what I love about it is that every single day is completely different. And the number of like hats you have to wear, like 1 minute I'm like deep into like working with the marketing team. 1 minute it's like very product development focused. 1 minute it's working with retailers and very commercial focused. And so constantly doing different things. And even though it's, you know, very much at a desk or in meetings a lot of the time, the content is constantly changing. And for me, that is what like keeps things fresh. I think I'm definitely someone where you do the same thing over and over, it gets pretty boring pretty quick. I don't know. I think I enjoy the variety, I would say, a lot.
But I bet it's so much. Would you sort of have expected this like a few years ago before you sort of dive into this? Because it's so much more different than I expected as well when I sort of started setting up a proper business after like years of sort of testing and playing around with things. I was like, wow, it's a lot different to what I thought, but I'm actually enjoying it a lot more than I thought as well. It's just crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, I think for me, as I kind of said before, I didn't really have any like expectations necessarily or like end goals. It was just around, okay, here's something that I really want to do. I'm just going to see how far we can go, right? And just, if you just focus each day on like getting better and better and better. And it's, as I said, it's been like a ton of challenges, like one thing after another. And it's one of those things that in the moment, you feel just like you're constantly like challenge after challenge after challenge after challenge. And then it's not actually until you like look back over the last 2 years and you're like, oh, we've actually like, there's been like a pretty nice trend upwards over that period of time. So it's, I think that's, it's something you probably don't do enough though, right? And I feel like with a lot of people, that's the case. You don't really step back and kind of look at the progress you've made kind of in it day to day.
Yeah, that's it. Well, let's rewind the clocks a bit then and sort of look at the progress. So one of the things that stood out for me when I was looking into your story was the fact you'd done Young Enterprise, didn't you? Around age 17, was it? How important was that to sort of, perhaps because I did that as well over here in England. So that really gave me a confidence boost and gave me a real taster of what's possible. Like you said, it's quite fun in the real business world. So that just gave me a little teaser.
Is it the same sort of thing? Like, I don't know how it works in the UK, but it's like you run a business at school and
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So yeah, we a team comes in and then you run like a small business, start it up from start to finish almost, and then pitch that idea to the young enterprise sort of community, and then you win awards based on how well you've done. Is it the same thing?
Yeah, essentially the same thing. It's like a year-long process in New Zealand. And it was one of those things for me where like I was okay at school. I enjoyed it. But there was never anything that really like clicked where I was like, oh, that's what I want to do. Like I wasn't like super into any subjects. But business was the one where like a weekend, I don't know what it was, but like a weekend, I think we had like a pitch. We did like a mock Dragon's Den type thing. And we did a pitch and we did terrible. We came like last place, but it was just fun. And I don't know, it was like one of those things which just clicked. And I remember like ever since then, it's basically like, I don't know what I was going to be involved in, but I knew it was going to be something business related. Yeah. And then, yeah, from there it evolved. So that was my final year of school that we did that. And we basically just decided to actually try really, really hard, which sounds trivial, but I think it's one of those things, right, where we're doing like six subjects, but we're spending like 80% of our time just focused on business. So everything else like fell to the wayside, but we had a ton of fun and managed to do pretty well. And there was like five of us. We did this like children's book was our business. There's this, nice. You know, Where's Wally?
Yeah.
We basically did like a New Zealand semi rip-off version of that called Where's Wooly, and it was a sheep. And so we like did this version where there's like this sheep hidden around all these New Zealand locations. And that's so brilliant. that was the business. We ran that for like a year.
Yeah.
But that was, as I say, that was like the catalyst where I just loved it. And then from there, I didn't know what I was going to do in business. I just knew it was going to be something business related.
On that point, just a minute ago, you mentioned sort of like having fun with business, even though like you've done the pitch and you're all done like really bad and it didn't sort of go your way, you sort of still enjoyed the pitch. Is that sort of a mentality you've brought into the real life business world now? Because that's something I've found as well, that the sort of the emotional, getting rid of the emotional attachment in certain situations. So if you call somebody to do with business and they just shout at you or it doesn't go your way, just sort of not letting that affect you emotionally and in your personal life. Do you sort of have that detachment or, what's your sort of views on getting to
it's a really, really good point. I'd say like, I think you get better at it over time, right? I think there's an element of perspective where if you can kind of see the bigger picture, you can kind of see that some, you know, individual problems or issues at the end of the day aren't the biggest thing in the world. And I think that helps. And then if you eventually learn that if you get like upset at every single thing that goes wrong, you're going to be pretty upset most of the time.
Yeah.
I've definitely got better at it. I think probably naturally I've always been reasonably laid back, I would say, and kind of half been like not really caring what happens, but also really trying to impact it, which is kind of a weird paradox, I guess. But I don't know. Like, what about you? Do you find the same that it's
That's exactly
improved it. Like, over time.
Yeah, it's definitely improved over time. But at the same time, I've got more hungry as I've got closer to the dreams and the goals I've set out. I've got more hungry, which has mean I've got more emotional, but then I've also learned from my experience to get less emotional. So like you said, it's a complete like weird situation where you're having to sort of speak to yourself every day and at every moment to try and relax yourself and detach or attach when needed. So it's a weird situation to be in.
Yeah, I've definitely got more hungry as well. I'd be interested to hear your perspective, but for me, I think it was like when you're starting out, at least for me, I had very low expectations. I had no idea like what was even possible. Like none of my family were started businesses or anything. So there was no kind of person that I could look to and to set a benchmark necessarily. And so it was literally just a case of like, oh, I'm just going to try really hard at this thing and see what happens. And then I think it was like 2 years in, I kind of realized that if you'd told me 2 years ago that I'd be doing what I was now, I would not have believed you. Like it was so out of the realm of possibility. And then I kind of realized, well, actually, if that's the case, there's no point of like just predicting the future or saying, oh, I'm going to do this or be able to do that, because you don't know what you're going to be able to do. And it's probably far more than you think. And so that, I think, probably provided quite a bit of motivation, right? Because when you're at that point, you're like, oh, wow, like what I thought was possible in 2 years is now completely different. Then you're like, okay, well, let's just have a go at this and see what's possible. And yeah, that to me, I think, as I say, I found the same thing, that I probably got more motivated and more hungry over time, I think, and definitely got more ambitious. Like I wasn't like an ambitious kid, and I wasn't probably particularly ambitious until like 19 or 18 or something. So that's something that's definitely grown over time.
Yeah, it's like you said, it's like a character builder, isn't it, being in the business world? You really learn a lot about yourself, and it helps you grow your confidence as well as grow your sort of ambitions and dreams. But you made a good point there about the like not having a role model in a sense in the business world to see how far you can push the boundaries, like almost having that reference point. And it's, I guess it's like rolling like a snowball in the snow. And you don't know that you could build a snowman, like you've never seen a snowman before. So you're just rolling along this snowball. Then all of a sudden, you're like, hold on a minute, I've got this massive ball. What if I make another massive ball? And then before you know it, you've got the snowman. It's just not having that reference. I think it's such a weird thing, which I think that's why elements such as young enterprise are so important, because it gives you that reference point. But how useful was school for you then? You said you sort of didn't find much interest in apart from business, and obviously young enterprise helped a lot. What would you rate the school system in sort of helping you in today's world with what you do now?
Yeah, I mean, I like the school I went to was a traditional kind of like boys' school, very kind of strong historical culture. I think it's the oldest public school in New Zealand. So there's a lot of like, I'd say like character within that. And like, I look back at time at school, it's just something like the coolest times. My best mates are from school. And I got a ton of value out of it. I just think that I probably weighted that value towards certain subjects more than others is probably the best way to put it. By we call it our year 13, but our final year at school, I was all in on one subject and everything else basically fell to the wayside. But up until that point, as I say, I kind of did a bit of everything, not super well, but okay. But wasn't really sure around where I wanted to go. So I kind of juggled a lot of balls. But by year 13, when I knew that it was business or nothing, I just went all in on that. But university for me was an interesting one, because I did a year at university. And I originally went to university because at the end of my final year at school, say I knew I wanted to be in business. I didn't know how to do that or where to start. So my thinking was that the best place for me to be while I worked that out is at university, as opposed to like at home in my bedroom. So that was my thinking. But then I got like 6 months in and started to kind of piece together a bit more of an idea of what I wanted to do. And then by the end of that year, I was dead set on basically leaving. And it wasn't because I didn't enjoy uni. I just had a bit more of a clarity over like what I wanted to do and more better alternatives, I guess. Like when I left school, it was like stay at home and do nothing, or like go to university and move out of home. So did you go to uni?
I was just about to say, it's almost like speaking to another version of me, because this is exactly what I had done as well. At the end of my, like you said, year 12, year 13, whatever, I can't even remember what it was over here. But yeah, like when you're just before you go to uni, I was debating like, is it for me? Should I do it? And I was like, well, what's the alternative? Because I don't know what else I'm going to do. So I just went to uni, and that's when I started If Only They Knew, the podcast, the media group and everything else. So yeah, it's sort of that stopgap. But I stuck it out for the whole 3 years, just because I didn't have the confidence enough to leave early on. So yeah, sort of a brave thing for you to do, to just to say, I've got enough from this first year, I'm gone, because I just didn't have the confidence to do that.
Well, Yeah, I mean, it definitely was a big decision, don't get me wrong. It was definitely one where, looking back, it felt like a far bigger decision than it was. But even at the time, my mindset, so I went to university at a town in the bottom of New Zealand called Dunedin, and then I moved up to the major city, Auckland, just to start the business. So it was moving city that I'd never lived in and everything. And basically my thinking was that, like, worst case scenario, like absolute worst case scenario, is I go broke and I need to get in my car and drive home and sleep on my parents' couch or move back in with my parents. Like, that was worst case scenario. I was like, even if that happens, I'm going to be fine. Like, it's not the end of the world. So I think, again, when you put it in perspective, and you could always go back to university as well. That's what I also figured. So I'm like, if I spend a year learning, like, I'm going to be glad I did it, even if it doesn't work, because then at least you know. So, and then, as I say, looking back, I don't think it was actually as big a decision as it felt at the time. But I do think, like, to your point, it's very difficult to probably put things like that in perspective, particularly with something like uni, because when it's such like a trodden path, and it's so like the thing that you do, it's very difficult to probably think outside of that, and anything to the contrary seems like such a big deviation from, you know, what you should be doing, that it I guess can be a bit of a challenge. But I don't know, what's it like in the UK? Is it the same kind of like culture where it's very like university is the path?
Yeah, it's got less like that, because especially where I come from in South London, it's like a working class area. So a lot of people were sort of like, I could never get to uni anyway. So there was more like following their dad's footsteps on a construction site or going into apprenticeships, or they were sort of getting that paid work really early doors. Whereas like there was a few of us that were going to uni from the beginning. That was their main intention. So it's a bit of a weird one. So yeah, the people that were sort of destined for that that was the social pressure. You need to go to uni to get that doctorate or to get this or to get that. So there's a lot of pressure on my head because I sort of fell in the middle of that group. I wasn't smart enough to have uni as like a aspiration of mine from the beginning. But then I also was in that middle group where I didn't have like a dad to go into an apprenticeship or construction thing with. So it was a weird one for me, but yeah, I definitely felt that that social pressure. And I think as an entrepreneur now as well, especially both of us being so young, I think I feel the pressure of you could just go and get a 9-to-5 because you need to pay the rent or you need to do this. And I feel like there's a lot of pressure just to go back into the normal world. And is that a pressure you feel as well, or are you sort of solid in your
there's really not, and I don't know what it is. I think, like, I'm definitely a bit of a contrarian personality to start, which I think helps, which, like, I'm just not too concerned about doing what everyone else does. But I think also, I don't know, I think it's just, again, it's I just know that I won't enjoy it. Like, I know for me, I need to be pursuing something, and I don't probably take well to being told what to do very well. So that lends itself to entrepreneurship, I think. And so, yeah, a combination of probably being a contrarian, not wanting to be told what to do, and then also just knowing that my personality, I kind of need that thing, not need, I guess, that to be really all in on something. Mm-hmm. Otherwise I kind of just mop around and feel sorry for myself. So I think that's probably
I'm the same as well. Like, when I was 16, while studying uni, I was working in a retail job in a game shop, and I was so depressed. I was so, like, just full of anxiety, depression. I had no hopes, no goals. Like, my immune system started shutting down. So I went to the doctors and, like, I started getting all, like, scars and marks all over my face where my immune system was shutting down. And that's when I said to my mum, look, this 9-to-5, this working for somebody else, it isn't for me. And even then she still didn't get it because, like we said before, she didn't have that reference point of somebody who's gone down the business path and made it work. So that was her worst fear, for me to just sort of break away from the tradition and sort of do my own thing because she couldn't see where it could lead to. It's only now that she's starting to see it. But yeah, I think some people just aren't made for the sort of normal life, I guess.
Yeah, I agree. It's interesting though, to your point on having a job like that. Like for me, there's nothing that gives you more motivation in life than having a crappy job.
Yeah.
For me, it was, I did like a number of years, like apple picking and apple thinning and stuff like that. And that's like, I absolutely hated it. And it was one of the things like every summer, this is my last summer. And then inevitably you'd be back next year to do it again. And yeah, for me, it was just like that, seeing like there's people, you know, who have to do that like 30, 40, 50 years. Mm-hmm. And the way I see it, like my job is thousands of times easier than most people's jobs because I just have to sit at a desk and send a few emails and do a few calls. At the end of the day, that's what it is. Like most people are having to like lift heavy things and like, you know, potentially get injured or do the same thing over and over. Like I think my job is probably pretty easy relative to most people. And even times like throughout starting the business, there's been times where I've been over in the factory and working with the guys over there, and I have like so much respect for all those factory workers, because every time I go over there, I can't keep up with them. They've been doing it for 40 years, the same thing every day, and here I am like this little New Zealand kid coming over and like not even able to do their job for like a month. And every time I come back, I get back to my desk and I'm just like relieved by like how easy my job is relative to like most people in the world.
Well, let's talk about what you call your job, but I guess it's more sort of a way of life now. How did you get into what you're doing now? Tell us a bit more about Nude, if you don't mind, please.
Yeah, sure. So as I alluded to, at the end of first year of uni, I left. So at that time, I had been spending more time while I was at uni basically pursuing business opportunities. So first thing I basically did when I arrived at uni is I reached out to a ton of people that I knew in New Zealand and was basically like, hey, I want to work for you for free. I just want to learn, give you my time. Like, there was no plan or strategy other than these people probably know more than me, so this is a good place to start. That evolved, I guess, looking back now, to get me a bunch of favors, which I didn't expect. And then through that process, I managed to meet a ton of amazing people and ended up starting my business Nude. And so that was, it was 2018, I believe. That was basically the thesis behind what we're trying to do. And I don't think I've mentioned it yet, but Nude being a pet food brand was looking at how can we create a premium pet store quality brand, but then make it accessible through the supermarket. So the pet industry is one where it's dominated by two big companies, Nestle and Mars. They both sell more pet food than they do chocolate, which is crazy.
That's crazy.
And they own like 70% of the global industry. And so there was a real opportunity to come in, and they own 70% of the global industry, but far higher percentage of the supermarket brands as well. So that was our thesis, is how can we come in, create a more premium brand, make it far more accessible to where 80, 90% of the population shops. And so that was, as I say, mid 2018. Off the back of that, I spent about 9 months jumping from pet food factory to pet food factory around the world. I think I visited maybe like 40 or 50 all up.
Wow.
Basically just try to work out how to build a pet food brand, because knew absolutely nothing, as you can imagine. Found a really good factory that we started working with, built out all the products, all the formulations, worked with some pretty amazing people around the world to do all that. And then we ended up getting Walmart Canada, who are the largest retailer up there, to partner up with us for launch, which was a high stakes start, but it was super exciting. And then we launched with them mid 2019 was our first launch. So and then, as I say, since then we've launched New Zealand, Australia, UK, France, Norway, and I think four or five other markets now. In each case, partnering with some of the biggest retailers around the world. So, it's been a pretty crazy ride. So many learnings, so many problems, but like loved every second of it.
Well, well done, by the way. I just had to get that in there. It sounds like you're absolutely smashing it. So well done. I always like to congratulate people when they are doing genuine things and doing it well. So congrats on that. In terms of the elements, what do you think the elements are that managed to, that helped you manage to get some of these big, like Walmart, Tesco's? What are the elements? Because like you said, you started off not knowing the industry at all. You started researching, you started looking for suppliers, going around all the factories and building it up. So what do you think some of the elements are? Is it the, I guess the main things, the value of the actual product itself with the nutrition inside the pet food? Do you think there's any other elements? Is it the branding? Is it you as a face of the brand? What are the elements that help you get to that level, do you think?
I think it's probably a few things. I think one is definitely some of the investors and partners that we work with. A lot more experience and have a lot of connections, which helps. That helps you, I guess, get a meeting. Then you have to, the brand has to stand its own 2 feet from there. And I think the industry is in a weird position where whenever you have a couple of companies that dominates, like a Nestle and a Mars, they have so much leverage that the retailers actually end up losing in a lot of cases. And so what's happened is that the retailers have become so reliant on these big companies that the big companies actually been able to take more and more margin, more and more profit. Retailers have worse and worse. And inevitably, there's a lot less innovation over time. And so I think over the course of probably a 10, 20, 30 year period, there became this opportunity to actually come in and start solving some of the problems for not only that consumers were facing in the industry, but also that retailers were facing in the industry as well. And one of the things we did when we launched in Canada was give Nude exclusively to Walmart. So that was quite a unique thing to do as well, because then they had this own brand that was almost their brand as well, which they felt invested in it, really wanted to get behind it. And that's something that we've done with a number of retailers around the world now as well, which I think has been massive. I think the branding was definitely unique. When we first launched in Canada, we made a ton of mistakes and we've changed some stuff since then. But I think it was definitely new, definitely a bit innovative. And I think from a marketing standpoint as well, we always had a very social and digital focus.
Yeah.
And I think that's, again, this was at a time, and I think it's still relevant, where a lot of these retailers are looking to become more digitally native, more socially relevant. So there was definitely an aspect of time in there as well, I would say.
Yeah, I like that point you made just there and just before that as well, about the current companies being so big. Like you said, Nestle, Mars, they're so huge, and you sort of suggested that because of their size, it means that they're very slow to innovate. Do you think that's going to be more of a trend sort of going forward, with smaller companies going into different industries, and almost like a David versus Goliath situation, where David's too fast, too quick and too smooth and gets around Goliath? Or what's your thoughts on
it's that? Well it's really interesting, because there's kind of like two ways you can start a business, right? You can either find a really specific niche or something that doesn't really exist and try fill it, or you can find something which is a big industry or a big company and try to do it in a better way. Like those are kind of like very broadly the two different strategies. And I would say, like, anecdotally, most people probably lead in the niche route, and it's like find that gap in the market and do something that, you know, another company is not going to come in and do. But it's kind of really hard, right? Because in most cases, there's probably a reason no one's doing it. At the end of the day, like, yeah, it's a lot more difficult to find that thing which no one had thought of, but everyone wants. Like, that's a really difficult thing to do. And so we actually think, probably contrary to what most people would say, that it's easier to actually go after a big company or play in an industry where there's a really strong competitor, because it's an established market, it's a big market. You're going to invest just as much time in trying to develop a business in a niche than you are in a big market. So, but the return in a big market is going to be so much higher. And to your point, a lot of these big companies will move a lot slower. There'll be a lot more bureaucracy in terms of how they operate. So there's a whole bunch of, I think, built-in advantages when you're a small company that you have in any industry that you're going into. I think the challenge that we're now going through as we start to grow and hire more and more people and hire some of, you know, the top people in the world and in our industry is how do you maintain that startup mentality when you're scaling? Because that is, to me, like such a challenge, I think. And I think as well for us, we've gone through, and I'm sure you've found the same, but like every 6 months, like my role, even more frequent than that, but every 6 months, my role completely changes. Yeah. And what I need to be good at to serve the business and do my job is completely different. And so at the beginning, right, it was very hands-on, very, very kind of just doing everything myself, jack of all trades. And then as we started to bring people, more people on, it was a little bit more pigeonholed in terms of where I was working. And now it is very just like team focused and building a team and making sure we're like maintaining and building in advantages into our culture that means we can grow and not lose any of those, that I guess, magic that you have when you're a small company.
So on that point you made about the startup mentality, and you were speaking about the ways you can sort of keep that integrity and keep that mindset going in. But also just before that as well, you mentioned about not knowing the industry enough. So before you started, obviously, so how can you learn about the industry? And I guess the answer to that is experience, right? Just diving in, jumping in and seeing what happens.
Yeah, it's a really good point, because I think, so basically to give a bit more context in terms of the life cycle of our business, so the first, call it 18 months, no one in the business knew a single thing about pet food. Like, apart from we were working with some amazing partners from a formulation perspective and everything, but in terms of the kind of core team that was leading it, there was no pet industry experience there. We've now brought in some pretty amazing people over the last few months or so, who bring a lot of that experience. It's been interesting actually reflecting a lot on like the pros and cons of each. And I actually think we've inadvertently probably had quite a nice process where coming in initially with everything completely new, no industry experience, you kind of learn things the non-traditional way, and you probably have perspectives that you wouldn't otherwise had if you had all the experience. But then there becomes a certain point where actually bringing someone in who knows what they're doing has a lot of value. And I think that's what's been one of the learnings for me over the last six to 12 months is actually if you get like the right people and they know what they're doing, there's so much value in that. And I think I probably undervalued a couple of years ago experience. And I kind of, I guess, thought that you could compensate for it just by working really hard and you know, running into the wall faster. But I now see probably that actually, if you get the right people and they know what they're doing, then you can save yourself like 10 years worth of of issues and problems. So but I think to answer your question, I think you need both. I think there's value in both, and having no experience is a good thing, but also bringing in experience at the right time is also a good thing.
And talking sort of finding that right person, you partnered up with Nick, is that right? How did you find each other? I just want to talk about the importance of sort of finding the right people, because like you said, it can add so much value and sort of stop you from making so many unnecessary mistakes.
Yeah, so I met Nick, who was one of the founders of Zuru, which is a toy and consumer goods company. So I met him 3 or 4 years ago now, 4 years ago. So he was one of the original partners with the business, and basically him and I walked through the supermarket and were looking at different categories, that going back to finding a big category that we thought we could do better. That was kind of the thesis. We're walking through the supermarket, looking at what we could do better in a better way, and kept coming to pet care as one that we thought just had so much scope to improve. Yeah. And the more we dug, the more we reaffirmed that as well. And he's been like incredible. Like I think he didn't have pet experience by any means, but had built a very successful business and fundamentally understood what it takes to build teams and build businesses. And you know, I would say, but I learned more from him and the people I work with every day than I did in the whole year at university.
Wow.
And I think that is always like a really good sign, I think, that you're on the right track when you're just constantly learning. And every, I say it to my team all the time, but every like 3 months, we look back at what we did 3 months ago and we're like, oh, wow, we were terrible. And that's, yeah. If you can do that every 3 months, then I feel like that's a good sign because it means you're constantly getting better and better and improving. But there's two ways to learn, right? There's make mistakes and there's learn from other people. And we've definitely had a lot of both, which I think has been a healthy mix.
Well, the name of this podcast is called If Only They Knew. So talking on the experience, the importance of experience, what is one thing you wish you knew at an earlier stage that would help you now?
Well, I think the value in experience, I think, is definitely one. Yeah. And there's a lot of cliches in business, I feel, which you don't really understand their truth until you make the mistake yourself. And so I think, you know, experience is one of those where we kind of just thought we could probably work it out our own way. And then we kind of realize actually we need to bring people in and we've done that. I think simplicity, one of the big things I've learned from Nick and a number of others is the importance of just simplicity in business and keeping things simple and every single aspect. It's almost like a universal truth in terms of when we're developing products, trying to keep them as simple as possible, trying to keep our operating model as simple as possible. Yeah. Whenever we're facing problems, often the simplest way is the best way. Because even like the issues that I was dealing with today, where actually you step back and you just fundamentally ask yourself, like, what are we trying to achieve? And if you can distill it down to just a very simple question like that, it allows you to solve the problem much easier. Yeah. And so there was like one of the issues is we're working out like, you know, we're having some stock issues and trying to work out, okay, how much like stock do we need and how we're going to manage this because we've got all sorts of imbalances all over the place. And when you're in it, it's a very confusing situation, actually just being able to simplify that and say, okay, what questions do we actually just need to answer here to solve this? Okay, we need to know, how much do we need? How long is that going to take us to get? And what's the difference? Yeah. And actually just really being simple and being able to step back and simplify things, I think has been so valuable. And then also just making, as I said, operating models and the processes we have super, super simple. I think that a lot of businesses put obstacles in people's way. And I think if you're going to hire really, really good people, ultimately, your job, I think, as a leader and a business owner is to try remove any obstacles that's going to stop them from making good decisions. And typical obstacles are like bureaucracy and exhaustive processes and chains of command and things like that. Like ultimately, they're there to minimize errors and they don't actually optimize for making good decisions. And so the way we always try to think about it is, how do we structure our business so the best people can come in and make decisions, and then we find out if they're good decisions, great. If they're not, we'll learn from them. And so it's about removing obstacles as opposed to adding in complexity and process. So that's definitely been a big learning. And then just like the importance of improving every single day and just constantly looking at all the little one percenters. I think that has been big for us. You kind of learn that actually every little thing matters and that getting the fundamentals right is the most important thing to be able to scale. And that's definitely one that's cliche, but the biggest mistake we've made is probably that, where we launched in more markets than we should before we had some of our fundamentals right. And if you have one little thing wrong, the whole thing doesn't work. And so you've got to tick the box. You've got to have a good quality product. You've got to be able to make it at a good price. You've got to be able to deliver the retailer the right margin so they can sell it at a good price. You've got to have good marketing. You've got to have like good people and good culture. You've got to have like a good supply chain so you can have the right product in the right amounts in the right place. And if any single one of those is wrong, the whole thing falls over. And I think there's been times where we've probably tried to scale too quickly, and it's meant that some of those fundamentals haven't quite been right. And we've spent more time trying to fix and change manage, having to fix all those problems caused by scaling too quickly, than it would have taken us just to spend a little bit longer, get the fundamentals right in the first place. That's probably the biggest thing I would say, like making sure that all the little boxes are ticked and then you scale.
Well, it seems like even though, like you have, like you said, you're bound to make mistakes anyway. It seems like you've made small mistakes or quite big mistakes
made some big mistakes.
Yeah, exactly. But overall, it hasn't. You're still going. You're still alive. You're still kicking. You're still doing numbers. Like, just looking at some of your numbers, like millions of bowls of pet food in four different markets, and now you're entering the UK with one of our biggest retailers. You're still smashing it. So like the little mistakes don't matter too much, I guess. Probably they matter a lot more to you, but in terms of the whole business, is still going, is still doing well. So what would you say is next for you then in terms of the brand? Like, you just continue to expand and, like you said, take care of those one percenters and just continue to expand globally, or what's the plan?
Yeah, it's we're at a stage now where we've launched in 11 markets total, four kind of core major markets in between New Zealand, Australia, UK and France. And so we're bringing a lot more, as I say, experts into the business now. We're fixing some of the little fundamentals that we probably haven't quite got right from a supply chain and manufacturing perspective. And then we'll just be looking to grow and launch in more markets and expand the range and developing a ton of new products, which is super exciting. We've got a ton of new opportunities and new markets that we're looking at and new retailers we're talking to. So we're just gonna keep going and keep having fun and see where it ends up. Because to your point, it's when you look at it over like a period of 3 years, you're like, oh, we've actually come a long way and we're actually doing some very cool stuff. And it's very easy to forget that. And all too often, we're just in the weeds and in the problems day to day that you're constantly just like, oh, this thing and this thing and this thing and this thing. And you don't actually step back and see the trajectory over time.
That's good. And like I said, I always like to just congratulate people again. So thank you so much for coming on today. And well done for everything you've been doing. The final thing then, what do you want your legacy to be? Your personal legacy. Have you thought about it? A lot of the guests haven't even thought about it, and I don't have an answer. So yeah, what do you want your legacy to be?
What I've always tried to do is spend my time on things that I think will minimize the chances of regret later in life. And so for me, obviously having strong family and relationships is one thing. Having been healthy is like another, but then pursuing something from a work perspective is super, super important. And I don't want to, I guess, in 40, 50 years, look back and be thinking I could have done more, or I had more in me, or I didn't, dream big enough or set big enough goals. And so selfishly for me, it's all around like, how do I minimize the regrets that I could have later in life, and ultimately just find out what is possible and what my potential is, because I have no idea. As I said at the beginning, I have like no idea what I'll be able to do. Every single time I've had an idea of what I think I could do, I've been miles off, for better or worse. So I've kind of given up on setting, like, sounds crazy, but even like setting goals and just saying, look, I'm just going to try really hard, see what happens. And ultimately if I give it my best shot, then wherever I end up, I'm going to be happy with it, because I think that's all you can ask for, right? And hopefully along the way, we build some some brands that are here for like a long period of time and work with some pretty amazing people and learn from some amazing people as well. And yeah, I think that's all we can really ask for.
Yeah, I'm very excited for you. And like I said, well done with everything. Final thing then. what's your final message to all the young entrepreneurs out there listening? If you have any advice or a final message, and then where can we find out more about you and your journey as well?
Yeah, I would just say, like, don't be afraid to think a little bit differently. And I know that sounds cliche, but I think most people don't really make a plan with their life. And I think actually sitting down and working out, you know, A, what you like or what you want to do, and then working out how you can like reverse engineer happiness or your goals, whatever it is, and actually putting a plan in place. So, oh, I'm going to do this. And even if you don't know what you want to do, working out a plan to find out how you're going to find out what you want to do. So trying a whole bunch of stuff and not being afraid to actually step back and think about that, as opposed to just going the typical process day to day to day, and not being particularly proactive.
Love that. And where can people find out more about you on your social medias and the company as well?
I have Instagram. I'm a bit of a hermit on Instagram, so don't expect much. But LinkedIn's probably the best. So just Alistair King on LinkedIn.
Well, it's been a pleasure, and it's been really interesting to find out your story and how you've done it as well. And I wish you nothing but the best in the future. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thanks, Ted. Appreciate the time. Thanks.